Remember, I was like, I can't swim, dude, when we were doing Fury. I was like, and you were like, man, I'll teach you, you know? Like, and this dude, like a killer whale, floated like all the way across underwater. Then he floated back, like he shot back. Then he went back. I've never in my life seen anybody better in the water than you. What does it mean to be a warrior?
That's a big label, you know. I think I would look at it like, what does it mean to be a better man, really? And that development, I don't think ever stops. I think we're always working on it, whether we're fathers, you know, brothers, sisters, community members, we're part of organizations or corporations or whatever it is. You know, it's all about continuing to cultivate yourself. And being open to alternative narratives too. I think it's so easy, you know, today in the state of our country and being as polarized as it is it's so easy to choose a side. That's easy.
Yep.
You know, my conversations with my friends that I love, you know, many of the conversations we have is about kind of sitting on the fence, you know, and being open to a varying opinions and dialogue on issues.
And where does that come from? I mean, the ability, because sort of not flag waving from either side.
Because no one's going to think for me.
That's right. So it comes from, and that because you've seen enough?
Well, it's you go overseas and you have an idea of what real destitution is, what real poverty is, right? What real suffering is under tyranny or oppression. And you come home and you love your country and you say, wow, what vast abundance we have.
Right.
We got work to do.
Right.
We certainly have a lot of things that we got to address here and we got to be adult about it. We have to look at our problems for what they are. But you have to be able to sit there and not let any organization or corporation provide you their opinion and let that sit with you. You've got to be able to challenge yourself and you've got to be able to say, hold on a second. You know, what's the alternative point of view on this? And even grossly, like people will take this for what it is. But if you look at, some of the greatest minds in our country, political scientists or, you know, people who are working in foreign affairs, yeah, they have studied the Communist Manifesto. They break it down. That's part of their, you know, graduate studies.
Sure.
It doesn't mean they're communists.
Right, right, right.
They're looking at the opposing point
because
of view.
Potentially we can get something out of this.
Why is the other person thinking this way?
Right.
What seeds or ideologies that have set this system or the civilization up the way it is,
right,
so I can deconstruct it and then deepen my sense of conviction or empathize and show compassion for their state of being and their way of living.
So the pursuit, the hunger for knowledge, the pursuit of growth, to deny that and sort of just say it's my way or the highway literally means to cut off the potential to grow or to learn or to be better.
It's too simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's too simple to say, you know, the Democrats and the liberals are destroying this country.
Right.
It's cheap.
Right.
You're cheating yourself.
Right.
Most Americans want the same things. We're a deeply divided country currently. It doesn't sit well with me. We've got a lot of great people from all different backgrounds and all different walks of life doing beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
We're not paying attention to those beautiful things right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of discourse and discord in this country that's been sown by political talking points. And I think we've lost the focus that the health of our nation depends on our civic ties.
Yep.
And it's been eroding for a little while now. And I think everyone needs to take stock and inventory right now, sit back, reevaluate why they're so pissed off,
right,
and say, hold on.
How do you do that? How do you reevaluate why? I mean, like, how do you fucking do that? I mean, like, people are angry, right?
Yeah.
They're angry for either what they have or what they don't have, what they feel like they deserve, how they've been slighted. But I guess, how do you reach that person?
Well, I think that it just comes down to, again, taking stock. If you're so pissed off and you're so angry, at one demographic, in this country, take pause, sit back, walk away from the situation. Mm-hmm. Go spend some time with Mother Nature.
Yeah, yeah.
Go get some perspective, yeah, first
yeah.
of all.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it relates to policing and certainly, you know, my perspectives on law enforcement and my understanding of the tremendous task that they have to undertake. Going back to the military, and we talk about, you know, the special operations community and how many different disciplines we're responsible for. You look at the scope of practice of a 1950s beat cop. Well, I'm there to walk down the street, make sure nobody jaywalks, keep traffic in line, and any drunks, put them in a cab and send them on the way home.
That's right.
What is the job of a law enforcement officer today? Vastly more difficult, vastly more disciplines. You're talking about terrorism. You're talking about domestic violence. You're talking about, you know, whether it's intoxicated people and the drug issue. It's a litany of issues that they deal with on a daily basis that they have to navigate. And it's a tremendous task. You know, one of the things that I saw early on in my career, being a part of the organization that I'm a part of, is I began to see some performance failure when we operated on the fire ground on fires. And it had to do with stress. And something that I'm very familiar with is, you know, when we go back to World War II and we have our ideas of World War II, whether it's implanted on us from books or Saving Private Ryan or Band yeah. of Brothers or the Pacific, right? One of the things that the general population doesn't understand is, for the most part, we were asking very young men to go on these ultraviolet situations with very limited training.
Right.
Hey, rely on one another. We're going to get through this.
That's right.
And the military really took... really took the performance of their soldiers, especially during the World War II era, to heart. One of the very first battles, so to speak, in North Africa after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, we sent an armored division into North Africa. And during that skirmish, the Germans had attacked British and American positions, and the Americans left their position. The lieutenant general at that time hunkered down in his bunker. There was no communication failure. And this is the first time our soldiers were shelled and shot at, and they didn't know what to do.
Wow.
So they really began to evaluate that, and in comes Patton, and he says, well, first of all, training needs to be way more rigorous. We're not preparing these guys for this fight. And how do we increase soldiers' performance? So the military and the DOD has poured tens of million dollars into really the performance of the soldier. And how do we inoculate our soldiers to the point where if we put them in these highly stressful situations, that they're prepared to perform
right.
and perform very well. And right. you look at where we are now.
Right.
Like if you go from World War II to Vietnam to Korea to the first Gulf to where we are now, and you look at performance rates of people, it's because so much money and effort has been poured into a lot of very stressful training that's indoctrinated into every module of training. And the military can afford to do that.
Right.
They've got the budget.
Right.
Now you take a 20-year-old, 22-year-old who goes through an 18-week police academy and goes into an organization that may be large,
mm-hmm.
like LAPD,
yep.
or small, like rural Mississippi.
Sure. Right.
right. Right. What devices do they have?
Right.
to draw upon.
Right.
It's what they know, but it also depends on their budget.
Right.
And it also depends on how much they want to indoctrinate and can indoctrinate those candidates with stress
right.
in these particular high threat scenarios. So you take a young law enforcement officer who's going to learn, and we all learn in state dependent learning, which means the state of consciousness that I'm in will determine how I perform in a similar scenario.
You got to create it in training.
I can't learn to box by punching a bag.
That's right.
I need to be punched in the face.
Deal. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So part of the military training is we're going to teach you a skill, and you're going to become competent in that skill. We want you to show us that you're proficient. Now I'm going to add complexity to that skill. Now right. I'm going to add distractions to that skill. Now I'm going to add sleep deprivation and caloric restriction to that skill. Now I'm going to add physical fatigue to that skill. Now I'm going to keep you awake for days in mission planning. And I want you to go exercise all of these different skills. And then you're going to go practice this mission. And in the process, where you may get into a scrap, right? And the whole thing is designed for you to be able to perform in these chaotic environments. does our law enforcement community have that afforded to them?
Right.
Do they have the capability to put their students through very rigorous types of training that will prepare them to de-escalate, deal with these issues, and then ultimately, when they do get into a violent situation, know when to turn it off? I've contained the threat. And since the threat is now contained, I've got to dial down with my breathing.
That's right.
And I've got to build in composure. And that's the thing, is composure isn't taught. Composure is earned. So the more you get into the boxing ring, how many times are you nervous?
Of course.
When you first started.
Of course.
And then you start to find your rhythm.
Time in the box.
Right? Yep. And then you meet a different fighter. Of course. Right? And you have to adapt. And you build in composure.
I've seen this before.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's earned.
Of course.
Right. So we have to be able to look at people who are looking to defund law enforcement. I say that's the exact wrong thing to do. Right. We need to look at and evaluate how large is their training department per capita per officers in the field. So like LA sheriffs and some of the training officers that I spoke to there, it's a grossly disproportionate amount of field training officers per people in the field. They have 10,000 officers in the field. They have, maybe dozens and a couple dozen, five, six dozen training officers. Hear your rounds, go to the range, right? And then you got another 6,000 that are in corrections in the prisons, right? We need to reevaluate and say, no, we need more money for these law enforcement right. agencies to expand their training departments that can teach de-escalation, but also know when to recompose yourself. That when you're in these violent situations, that you're through your breathing and through that initial adrenaline rush and this cortisol dump from your sympathetic nervous response system into these fight modes, that you can regain composure. And that all goes back to that state-dependent learning. I've been here before. I'm familiar with this before. I've hardwired this into my system. This is when I should turn it off.
That's right.
The threat is now contained. We've detained this person. Everyone is safe. I've evaluated the environment, right? And if I need to turn it back on, I can turn it back on. If I need to turn it back off, and those are the things, in my opinion, that need to get exercised, right? All to better the performance of our community policing, fund them more. Mm-hmm. Bring in some of these military experts that mm-hmm. can help them deal and start to inoculate, some of these smaller organizations that do exist out there. Take, my buddies from LA Sheriffs, those retired guys, and pump them into, these rural areas and teach them, because these guys have a tremendous amount of experience,
That's right.
A tremendous amount of wisdom from their job, that really care about people. But throughout their life, and throughout their career, they know when to turn it off.
That's right.
And if you've never been in a scrap before, it's like, you're going to be a law enforcement officer. So guess what? You're going to get in a lot of scraps, but we're going to prepare you for it.
That's right.
Because we want you to be able to think under those stressful conditions.
Do you feel like you have, when you talk about sort of de-escalation and understanding your surroundings, you have a mastery of that. Would you say you achieved that in training, or did it take?
It's ongoing. Anything is perishable, right? Like, and I wouldn't say I've mastered it by any stretch. But like, if I go to, let's say, jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. I know I'm going to get my ass kicked in the dojo, and it's a wonderful thing, and it's humbling. But at the same time, it's helping me stay with your breath, control your breath, counter here, and me controlling my breath in these moments where I may get choked out, or I may have to tap. Is it allows me to exercise that calm. And in those calm states, I have more available to me cognitively, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, I have mm-hmm. more tools that I can draw upon. Mm-hmm. If I let stress get the better of me because I can't control my breathing and I can't think my way out of something, right? I'm a goner.
But again, training then is looking for situations to get uncomfortable in, looking to fuck
Always.
Yourself up, so to try to get better and deal with them as they come in.
Whatever
life
keeps you humble, man.
That's
like
right.
you said, if it's a big wave out there, yeah. right? If it's nature, spending time with nature, if it's, being in uncomfortable conversations, if it's going and training, it's always a good thing. There's all these wonderful tools out there that will humble us and, yep. Just also... try and spend your time with smarter human beings.
I don't know about that, brother. What is the difference between sort of de-escalation, sort of having a physical, maybe not mastery, but a good handle on yourself in terms of staying aware of your surroundings, assessing a situation? But what about morality? Does morality play into that? Does it play into it as a soldier? Is there ever a time where you say, you know, I know this is being asked of me, but this is not right, so I'm not going to do that?
I think as it relates to law enforcement, it's kind of, you know, officer to officer, right? If you got a 150-pound young Hispanic officer versus the guy who's 225, you know, former like linebacker mm-hmm. in college who's mm-hmm. now a sheriff somewhere, you know, there's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, right? Can the 225-pound sheriff exercise the letter of the law? Yep. Right? Can the 150-pound, you know, female Hispanic sheriff or law enforcement officer, can she exercise the letter of the law all the time? She's got to be smart. She's got to weigh the situation out. Right? She's got to, is the spirit of the law, is anyone in immediate danger? Is mm-hmm. this, if I really get into it with this person right now, how is this going to turn out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to call for backup. There's mm-hmm. all these tools you can use, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's a tall order, you know, for our law enforcement community that receives very little love. Like, I'm a firefighter, and we got kids coming up to the truck every day.
Yep.
There's a lot of love. Yep. Hey, it's a fire truck. It's a fire truck. Yep. You know, there's people coming by the station every day, and it's a wonderful experience. Yep. And I feel for our law enforcement brothers
man.
And sisters out totally. There because they do not receive that from the community, certainly from politicians at times. They're always the whipping boy.
That's it. And it's been a pretty acute shift. I mean, there's always been sort of tension, but fuck, man. I mean, it's been acute now where, you know, we had Jerry, who, you know, we had him on here, and he's talking about, you know, the community that he's been serving for, you know, decades, going into restaurants that always gave him food. They don't want him in there anymore. And to sort of be approached with that because of the unbelievable mistakes of, you know, the worst element of them. It's staggering.
It is, you know, and I think that if we community wide, you know, the compassion that we're asking of our countrymen to show an impoverished community or a community that suffers, that if we can open that lens also to the law enforcement, it's like, what do they need to be better?
That's right.
Right. It's
that's
not
right.
what you take away.
That's right.
There's no solution in any of that.
That's right.
Right. What do they need and what can we provide them so that we can be better? So
that's right.
Right.
I can understand the fervor that comes from, you know what, you're disrespecting law enforcement. Fuck that. You're disrespecting the fly. Like, I can understand it, but like, there is an evolutionary step that's above that, that says we can be both. We can say respect law enforcement. And we can also say, hey, let's listen to what's going on with these communities. Let's look at this honestly and authentically and have the courage to try to get better. Like, you can do both. And I think that it's too easy to go to a place of anger where that never works. It's always, you got to go to a place of trying to understand, trying to converse, trying to connect. And these are just qualities I feel like that aren't being pushed to the forefront right now.
Yeah, it's too easy. Like, what's perpetuated is to be reactive, right? If you look from a very psychological perspective of what the intent of the news organizations are there to do,
mm-hmm.
are they there to provide you information or are they there to get you to react? And if you do react,
you'll keep watching.
Take stock of that.
Yeah.
Do your own inventory, clean your own house and say, why am I reacting to this all the time? Why am I looking at this and getting upset all the time?
Yep, yep.
Is this
yep.
making me a better human being?
Yep.
Is this improving my life?
Yep.
Or is this just stoking and the embers and the flames that exist within me? Because they've tapped into the very base nature of my human being.
Now they're just giving
me, and that's both sides. And you walk away and you're pissed off, right? And if it's on the TV at the fire station, I turn it off.
Yep.
You know, go turn on the NASA network and watch the International Space Station spin around the planet. Like, let's hold on, everybody. Yeah. Like,
look at a picture of your kids.
The conversation I had with this young man today, really had to do with his understanding of the military and what's been presented to him in his life. And he basically understood the military as a political organization that served a mission of war.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that most people understand that the majority of what the military does is humanitarian.
Right.
If you look at what's happened with recent typhoons, earthquakes, just in the last 10, 15 years, the military is always present. If you look at the surplus of food that we have in this nation and what we're doing for the impoverished parts of the world and delivering food to create some stability and provide security, food security for some of the countries, that's the military's mission for the most part. And there's a tremendous amount of job satisfaction and reward that comes from that when serving in the military. I'm part of something bigger than myself. I'm providing people the very necessity to live. And what's really causing the discord in this country and breaking Americans apart?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's various layers to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it starts with turning off the news, whatever news network you listen to.
Where do you get your news?
I try not to dive into it too much.
Mm-hmm.
I try to go international.
Mm-hmm.
It's a broader perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very objective look at America.
Mm-hmm.
And I could say with 100% certainty and confidence as well amongst my peer group, when people thought the Arab network Al Jazeera was a propaganda machine to a certain extent, it was, but so is American news.
Mm-hmm.
They were studying Al Jazeera. They were ingesting Le Monde out of France and Der Spiegel out of Germany, and mainly BBC. BBC is public funded.
Right.
And NPR is public funded.
Yep.
So if you're paying attention to human interest stories and human stories,
yep.
Right? Like these are about our people, and things are always in flux and things are always going to change. But, all I got to do is protect my dirt and my family. And then whatever means I have necessary, try and make people's lives better around me. Cause brother, we're blessed. We're not blessed.
Of course. From your time overseas and in your experience in either the enemy or the locals that live there, did you learn anything about being a better soldier, about being a better man by them? And if there is anything that sticks into mind, what would that be?
I think one thing that comes to mind specifically with, Iraq is, you have a country that's been under the fist of Saddam Hussein for 30 years. And I think one thing that always strikes me is the resiliency of the human spirit. For people that have suffered for so long under that type of rule, to still ingratiate themselves and invite you into their home, there's a lot of unknowns when you're, 6'4", carrying a large weapon, and a lot of uncertainty in their lives. Are we there to occupy? Are we the imperialists that some people say we are? And still to break bread with them and to open yourself up and to them just as much as they've opened themselves up to you, and to share those meals. And in those cultures and those ancient cultures throughout Mesopotamia and the Middle East, breaking bread, is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hospitality and the honor of sharing a meal with a stranger is something I think that we're missing in this country.
Big time. Yeah.
To say, no, please come in. Let me feed you.
Totally.
Let me provide you sustenance.
Yeah.
And that to me was so humbling and something I wish we did a little bit more of in this country, Love this country through and through. But God, I would love to see some people on either side of the aisles here. Share some space with one another.
Yeah.
Get some laughs.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Again, my experience with guys like yourself, very open-minded, very hungry to learn, very empathetic. Where do you feel like the state, what's the political discourse in that community
right now? I don't get a sense of it. It's always about the mission.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you do create you know, certainly some waves in a community, you're going to isolate yourself really, really quick.
How so?
Well, if you're making a stand politically,
right.
First of all, it's an apolitical organization.
Right.
We're serving the Constitution. You take an oath, you take a vow
right.
to the ideals of the nation. That's what you're there to serve.
Right.
You're not to serve any personal agenda.
Right.
You got to learn really quick. It ain't about you.
Right.
And if you just can't get over yourself, you'll find yourself.
Yeah. And to what extent do you think sort of sensitivity or political correctness, where does that play into it? You know, where's the line between empathy and sensitivity? I guess that's the first question. Do you see a line?
No, but what I do see is like, I think we're now at this stage where, you know, the extreme left and the extreme right have been holding the microphone for an extended period of time. There's so many great people out there.
Sure.
The good people out there and the wiser people out there. They need to start grabbing the microphone. Mm-hmm. They need to start getting engaged. We need them to step forward, mm-hmm. The subject matter experts in different fields, and we need to give them a say.
Yep.
Because I think that's what people are really hungry for. That's my lens. That's my perspective. Agree with it or disagree with it. But ultimately, I think people want something very genuine, something that comes from the heart, something that's very authentic.
Authentic, yeah.
Right. And to provide people with a sense of hope, of a sense of calm.
Sure.
Right. That
but authentic sometimes gets I think confused. I think people confuse sort of just being sort of you know acting with reckless abandonment or just being different as authentic. And I think that's different from being true to who you actually are.
You know, I think a lot of people make the mistake of confusing kindness for weakness.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a grave mistake because some of the most incredible, as your words, warriors that you've met in your life and the people that are serving overseas right now are some of the most gentle, kind, loving spirits.
Absolutely.
And exercise a tremendous amount of humility in their lives. When it comes to, you know, the people that are seeking something and are searching for something, whether that's a deeper sense of purpose and meaning in life is... It's right there. It's right there in front of you. Like if you want to get involved and you want, you know, to find, let's say your tribe or your clan, it just takes effort. Mm. It's right there in front of you. Mm. Go across the street, go into a neighborhood that needs help. You want fulfillment.
That's right.
It comes through other human beings. It's not in a trophy. It will never be about a trophy. It will never be about accomplishment. It will never be about your bank account.
Right.
You know, you want wealth, build friendships.
That's right.
And build experiences and really challenge yourself with those experiences. Take some chances.
Yeah.
Failure is universal.
Sure.
Everyone has failed.
Sure.
Everyone has fallen on their face.
100%.
And grossly. And humble leaders will take the chance on you because they know that they've failed themselves.
Yeah. That's right.
I've failed in my career and people have recognized it. I almost lost my dream job. But it took a leader with humility to say, now that because you failed, you won't make that mistake again. So I know the guys in your unit will be safer.
Mm.
And I literally going to that meeting, it was already like, I'm done. I've made this grave mistake.
Wow.
And he knew in his own wisdom and his own experiences, like, hold on.
There's something to gain from that failure. There's 100%. Something, of course.
And keep trying.
Of course.
Keep trying and keep trying. There are people all over the world that would love to come to the United States. There's less bureaucracy. There's more opportunity. And our English friends, right? When we spent some time in England together, you know, I used to ask, what do you think about America?
Mm-hmm.
And more times than not, they just say, I love the American can-do mentality.
Amen.
Like you guys just have it in your back pocket.
That's right.
You want to do something? I can do it.
I think it's such a vital experience to get your ass overseas and really spend time and not, you know, as much as on your own as you can, because I think you'll appreciate and love this country so much more and see how, the American spirit, there's literally nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
It's America appreciation. You want to appreciate your country? Like, America appreciation starts with going overseas, and don't go somewhere, in a developed country. Right. Yeah, broaden your horizons, right. Get some experience with some French cuisine or whatever, right? And enjoy it. Yeah. But go somewhere that has very little to nothing and see how good those people are and how good they treat each other and how welcoming they are to you. And they get by with so little, but more than anything, they get by with themselves.
Yeah.
And you look and you say, man, we have so much back home. I've just been taking some stuff for granted.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to get uncomfortable. And then getting uncomfortable and shaking all of that out of your system, getting him some perspective is
everything,
invaluable.
Everything. And so tell me, I told you I had my little brother on here, and he was talking about, it's something we talk about a lot here, empathy and compassion. And he was talking about in being a surgeon, and how, really good surgeons, people kind of talk about surgeons as sort of being divorced from their feelings, and how you have to, kind of go in there and you just got to be able to turn it off. And he was sort of explaining, but to be really great, you have to also be able to turn it on, and you've got to really be able to get to know and understand and let your patients and their families into your heart to really understand what it is that they need. You and I have talked a little bit in the past about, I think you call it like the beast inside of you, and turning the beast on and off. What does that entail? And like, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It's, if you're going to, or potentially going to inflict extreme violence against other human beings, there has to be a very aggressive side of yourself, akin to, without the aggression of your brother. I have the surgical tools in my hand. It is my duty to save this person's life. I have to perform right now, right? He's removing a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Not to dehumanize the enemy, but in the same token, that ideology is a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I have to remove that cancer, right? I have to apply a scalpel to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big old sledgehammer, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to create a big wide swath of a mess here.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to apply that.
Mm-hmm.
And one tool is aggression,
mm-hmm.
right? But if that's sustained for too long, that's going to damage the human being. You know what I mean? So being able to turn that off and recenter yourself is something that I think that the individuals have to discover is what tools do you use to turn the human being
back on?
What do you use? Initially, it was nature, spending a lot of time with the ocean, underwater, spearfishing or diving. It was complete silence. I could feel like I was flying through the kelp forest, surfing. I found a lot of peace with family and friends at the kitchen, in the kitchen, preparing food and having that community. Even though I didn't feel as necessarily close to my own family as I did to my teammates at the time, because of the experiences I had. And then just knowing that at some point, what I was trying to do wasn't working. And by making myself vulnerable to other people that could help me navigate, where I was in my life, and opening myself to receive care and help was transformative. It was through other human beings that invested in veterans and different veterans group and law enforcement and firefighters that have experienced a tremendous amount of trauma in their lives. And having those shared experiences with those groups was incredible. I got to go out and escort and share space with a bunch of veterans, law enforcement, and firefighters at a program called Save a Warrior, which was in Ohio. And as an escort, and they said, "Hey, Kevin, do you want to sit through the indoctrination and the intake?" And I said, "I'd love to."
Yeah.
Hold space for other people. And then going through this process, I really loved what I was hearing. And in the process, they kind of surprised me and said, "You want to stay for the week?" and I got to stay for the week. And it was incredible because, you know, one of the sacraments there was about, you know, there's so much shame and guilt applied to being vulnerable for a man in today's society. And they explained to you the physiological effects of hyperfocus, hypervigilance, hyperaggressions for sustained periods of time. The brain changes. How do we create balance? Well, there's tools that we can use like meditation, but there's also methods to heal. And tears are an incredible vessel in that process. Just to sit and watch men be vulnerable with one another, to share their trauma and to exercise that. I mean, John, one of the most profound experiences I've had in my life. There's a gentleman that sat in a circle that grew up in an abusive home, physically, sexually, mentally abusive home, with drug addicts. He decided to escape it, you know, failing out of high school, decided to escape it, joined the army, went overseas, lost a bunch of people in his unit, came home, in the process, lost his young son, to suffocating in the crib, because his wife was on drugs at the time. And then, you know, and then contracted MS. So he's like, I'm done. Like, life just has not been fair to me.
Yeah.
He goes, and he shared with everyone, and he said, look, you know, this is my last shot. Yeah. Like, I'm just letting you guys know.
Yeah.
But throughout the week, he put in every single effort as a human being to make himself as vulnerable as possible and just let go of that trauma and open up, and tears just all week poured out of this guy. And in the process, John, I watched his skin color change. I watched his eye color change. I watched his posture change. I watched him go through horse therapy. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it was metamorphosis.
Yeah.
And the love and support that he received from the staff members and the shepherds that were there, and then from the group. And it was all because he just made himself vulnerable, and he needed help, and he asked for help, and he received the help, and he received the love.
Why don't we recognize that as the courage that takes? That is such a struggle. It takes so much courage to do that.
Ancient cultures knew this. Before our ancient warriors, whether they were Native Americans, Naked Greek warriors, you know, before men came home from war, there were rituals that they had to go through, exercising those demons, because society and the civilization knew that if you didn't provide a platform for this trauma that they experienced to be exercised, right, then they would bring that home. And the communal qualities of that civilization depended on the health of these men.
Right.
And so what rituals do we have in place now? Well, you can board the plane first. Hey, everyone in the stands, the baseball game, stand up and celebrate our veterans. It's not doing anybody any good.
Right.
You know, hey, it just takes space, and it takes that ear. It takes listening. It takes professional help, but it takes love. You take a plant. If a plant's dying in the corner because it doesn't have sunlight or water, what do you do with it? Put it in the sunlight. You give it water. You're going to love it. You're going to take care of it. Right. You foster dogs, right?
Yeah.
You're going to put them in a better environment. What does love do?
Yep.
Brings them right back. So when men talk about love, once again, people are going to confuse it with weakness and or kindness or soft spot. And hey, if people feel that way, I just say, you know, I challenge you to look at the ancient philosophers and say, what's the longest man a road will travel? It's from his head to his heart. And once you spend a little bit more time in your heart and you make yourself available to other people and you invest in other people, your happiness just grows exponentially.
Yeah, man. But like, Kev, I think it really is going to take men like yourself, everyone's got these traumas, and there's so many fucking forces at play that tell you to keep that shit bottled up, and judgments, and I feel, again, it's this rah-rah chest beating bullshit fake projection of strength from people who haven't actually been in the models aren't out there, man.
Well, maybe it's the silent majority, whatever it is, but I know that there are millions of men out there right now that are far better human beings, vastly better because of their wives.
Of course.
Right. Where are our wives?
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
They're heart-centered creatures that are so loving and so present,
yeah,
and put us in check all the time.
That's it. That's it.
Doesn't make us weak.
Nope.
Makes us better.
100%.
Makes us more present. Makes us more available for our sons and our daughters and our friends.
Yep.
There's the balancing forces, right? So, you know, I think that that's just part of my journey and my study into warrior cultures and the ascension, you know, of the man.
Yeah.
You look where it all ends. And you just aspire to be a better human being. You know, in those virtues, always at the top are benevolence and love and charity and kindness.
Yeah.
You know, just study the samurai Bushido.
Yeah.
You know, once you listen, you've gone to war, right? You've been this warrior who has honed his craft.
Yeah.
And he's honed his archery and his short sword and his long sword.
Yeah.
Right, he's become so proficient in warfare, but now it's his duty to practice calligraphy and poetry, right, and sit in stillness. And it's his duty to develop a relationship with nature.
Wow.
But, you know, as he continues to develop, then where does he land? Well, now you're the teacher. And now that you've found peace and balance in your life, it is your duty to the community, to the sons and daughters of that community, to develop the whole human being, not just that one tool you used to be in warfare.
Of course, of course.
Right? Now let's develop the heart. Let's develop the mind.
Yeah.
Right.
And then let's pass it on. Yeah, that's beautiful, man. And so, I mean, talk about, let's talk about Trace for a second, man. Let's talk about, like,
oh, boy.
I mean, you're
right here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, man, I think you and I are really really aligned in that, man.
She's very affectionate. She's very loving, and she's always got her eye on the prize.
Mm-hmm.
The moment is now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and men can live here, right? We can be in our heads. We can be all over the place.
Of course.
We can be in the future. We can be in the past. What have I done? What do I need to do? Right? We're always in that kind of that planning survival mode. That grounding force comes in and goes, hold on a sec. Get on the ground, spend some time with your daughter.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And there's so much beauty in that.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, you're so right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And to be there and to have that in your life, I think, is invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about you know, now having a daughter. And that journey and just beautiful Zazie and you know what that's done for you and how that makes you think about the world.
I'm gonna exercise my right here and say, how does it make you feel?
I don't know. I see so much. I like my kids, like, just give me like so much hope, you know, like there's no journey that I'd rather be on than the journey with them, you know? And I know that this is a job that I'm going to fuck up. I know that it's a job I'm going to do my absolute best in. And I, you know, it's the thing that I can say I'm approaching with like absolute clarity and honesty, you know, like I just want to be with them by their side and say, hey, this is what daddy thinks. This is where I screwed up. This is how you're going to do better. Everything, every single thing is through them and about them. Honestly, man, the only reason I'm here trying to do this, I'm very worried about the world, man. I'm very worried about the state of discourse and how far apart we are. I'm very afraid and disappointed in the division, and that is like not how I fucking live my life. That is not how my family's gonna live their life. And so I think that, like, you know, we have to be there for them and be with them and guide them and get their back and provide and support and protect them, but we also have to do our part, I think, in eliminating some of this fucking division and trying to bring people together any way we can. Anyway, that's a long ass answer. Question.
It's beautiful. You know, it's, you know, knowing you growing up with two brothers like myself,
mm-hmm.
coming from an all male family,
mm-hmm.
And my wife and I, we tried to have, children for 7 years,
mm-hmm.
7 years of fertility. and watching my wife go through the ups and downs of miscarriages and pregnancies that don't take, and her spirit,
man,
through the whole thing, her emotional constitution through the whole thing.
Fuck.
What a source of strength in the household. She was really the strong one through the whole thing. And I kept, hey, how are you doing, babe? Are you okay? Okay. And it was, you know, her experiences up until the very end. I'm not listening to the doctors anymore. I'm going to follow my own rules. This is the way I want to do it. She had already been through a lot. We get pregnant.
I know.
We knew we're going to have this daughter. And I don't know if I shared this with you, but when we talk about women and we talk about strength, my wife, you know, we had a cesarean, my wife gave birth. We go into recovery, and then my wife started hemorrhaging really bad. That all started when the nurses were handing our daughter back to my wife to bond. And one of the nurses picked up on it really quick and said, hold on a sec. Like, she looked at Tracy, she said, do you want your daughter? And Tracy said, no, I want to sleep. That's not a normal response. So the nurse ripped back the sheets, and my wife was bleeding profusely. So here I'm bearing witness all this. They rip all the cables out of the wall. They wheel my wife into surgery. She spends the next hour and a half, and by the grace of God, on a Sunday, the reproductive oncologist happened to be in the hospital. So the laborist and the OBGYN could not stop the bleeding. He comes in and saves her life. And my wife goes into the ICU for the next 3 days. So I'm bouncing between the nursery and the seventh floor with the nurses. They're like, honestly, like, Kevin, like, go be with your wife. Like, we're going to take care of your daughter. And the kindness that the nurses showed me and the reassurance that they gave me. And then I go down and spend, you know, days with my wife who's in a coma. She was on this ventilator, and they tried to see whether she could tolerate removing her off this ventilator. And in the process, she couldn't tolerate it. So, okay, here we go again. Like, she's still in her coma. And just before they removed her intubation tube and were going to take her off the ventilator, as they continued to give her blood and her fluids and essentially keep her alive, she became more and more cognizant, more conscious. And her first instinct, because my wife can sign, her first instinct was, when she woke up and she looked at me, was, you know, she's like, I want to speak. I have this tube in my throat. She kept doing this and doing this. And a really profound moment, she realized she couldn't speak. She's just like, I'm going to sign. So she starts to sign to me. She starts to spell Zazie's name. She's like, is she okay? That was her first instinct. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, dude.
Powerful moment. And the power of a mother who's been a mother for days, right?
Yeah.
For that all to kick in.
Yeah, man.
It was insane.
Yeah.
But that has carried over into many facets of our life, you know, and those moments and appreciating we're alive, we're together, we've been through a lot. She gives everybody every ounce of love she comes across, stranger or family. Mm. And you know, it's a gift that she got from her own family. Her family is such a source of strength and wonderfully bonded, and has been through a lot in their own lives.
Yeah.
From civil rights era, yep. And lack of opportunity. I think it's very easy for Americans to look through the lens of, well, the Constitution has been written. The laws are what they are. It's an even playing field. Go out there and get it. It's not an even playing field. If you understand that hope has eroded under the strain of cultural and political oppression, you know, of 400 years of slavery,
yeah,
of Jim Crow laws, of my father who couldn't buy a home in his first professional career. He wasn't allowed to buy a home, you know. You talk about with your family to provide, protect, but make it better for them than it was for you. That's what we're charged as families. Yep. Well, he's not allowed to buy a home to create generational wealth, right? That's one aspect of how these families have been affected. So, you know, we come to a crossroads in an America that sits in an era of what we were talking earlier, abundance and creature comforts and ease. And with a flick of a button, you could get something at your doorstep in the next 2 days. And our conveniences are everywhere. And that doesn't exist. That just doesn't exist for everyone in America. And if you love your country and you love, you know, certainly our veterans, and you love our military, and you have a deeper sense of compassion for those veterans that are going through tough times when they do come home because they serve their country, I just ask your audience to, you know, to take that gaze and apply that same sense of compassion for a community that has suffered for hundreds of years, and become a student and learn and open your hearts to how they may not have had the same opportunities as everybody else. And look, it's going to take all of us. There is injustice in this country. We're not perfect. We're a beautiful country. It is a wonderful country. But we will be so much stronger if the strengths and our civic bonds were so much tighter. But that takes, you know, effort. Look at the demographics of people serving this country, right? 13% of America is Black. 27% of the Army is Black. That should hit home for a lot of people. And then you look at other ethnic groups that are serving this country. So people really need to understand the sacrifices people are making to afford themselves a better opportunity in life, through education, to grow as individuals in the military, and to serve a country that they love, right? So yeah, we should be taking care of our veterans. And when it comes, you know, from my perspective and what I've learned through my family, is it's your turn to listen, pay attention. This continues to happen. And if you look at history, it's your duty as an American citizen to reevaluate, really evaluate what's been happening, and look at the beautiful parts of our history and look at the ugly parts of our history. Mm-hmm. We are what we are. Mm-hmm. And if you want to become a better human being, going back to investing in other people and taking other people on your wing and cultivating them and being a part of your community and strengthening those bonds in your community, I think you want to be a leader, show some humility, and step in and get in uncomfortable conversations with people from the Black community and listen and be open to a different narrative. You know, be open to other people's suffering, and you want to make this country stronger. You might not be able to serve this military, but you can certainly make some effort and stepping forth and stepping in the ring and getting in there with people who have less than you do, who need help.
I think it's really interesting because, you know, the argument that people use against what, you know, Kaepernick's action and the idea of kneeling. And now when you look at the NBA and you look at this entire movement, is that it's anti-military, or it's anti-American and specifically anti-military and against the folks that have gone and served and died for this country. And what are your thoughts on that?
I work in an environment where my whole life people are very patriotic. You know, there's flags in every fire station and in front of every fire station, or painted on the walls. Having a lot of friends that are in law enforcement, right? Flags are on cars. You know, obviously, starting my young adulthood and my careers in the military, I hold the flag near and dear to my heart. You know, exercising my own self-mastery and some restraint. My initial reaction to Kaepernick was, I don't agree with what's happening right now, but I'm going to take pause. And I really started to evaluate, you know, his gesture. And I started to evaluate how long he decided to take a knee, and who he consulted with. And he consulted with veterans. He consulted with a lot of people. This wasn't a hasty act.
Totally.
And, you know, the way I look at it and being a part of a Black family in the United States is, I broke it down to this, is if you look at kneeling as a gesture, when do we kneel? We kneel when we propose to our wives. We kneel in church to pray to God, right? We kneel to surrender, right? We're availing ourselves. We're not pissing on the flag. We're not burning the flag like we see all over the news in different parts of the hard-hit worlds where they want to vilify America. He's not pissing on the graves of veterans. He's asking. He's on his knees and he's asking America to pay attention.
Yeah.
It's an emotional subject. And, you know, once you dip your toe in a greater understanding of what's happening in this country, and certainly bearing witness to the stories of uncles and aunts and fathers and mothers that I've shared a lot of time with, you can't help but feel a deeper sense of compassion. That gesture to me was simply, please pay attention. And if you go down the rabbit hole and you listen to people like Brian Stevenson, who went on TED Talk, he had a presentation on TED, and I think it's one of the most listened to presentations on that whole platform, about social and racial injustices. And as it relates to incarceration rates, sentencing rates, expulsion rates of young African-American children for the same crime, for the same misdemeanor, whatever it is, more times
than it's inarguable.
It's the severest form of penalty for the same infraction than it would be for a white person. You hear this, and then you start looking at the statistics. You apply that to what you bear witness to in your life, and it's going to open you up as a human being. And you can't help but feel a sense of, I've got to do something. You know, I've got to be a part of something. I've got to support something bigger than myself and make people aware. I can't have these conversations all the time in the firehouse because people are so quick to say, I'm not going to watch football. I'm not going to watch basketball. I'm not going to watch this sport because of the kneeling. And it's just, you know, they're disrespecting the flag.
What is that?
It's not disrespecting the flag.
Right.
I think it's a very reactionary way to look at, I'm just going to choose a side here.
Okay, so but what is the act of saying I'm no longer going to watch football? I'm not going to watch basketball. How would you describe that act?
You know, for me, it's a very simple way of looking at a problem. You know, it's a very complex problem,
uh-huh.
Right? And I think it's unfair. I think it's very, very unfair to the issue. It's like, let's get ugly. Let's get uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Let's exercise.
Isn't that literally the definition of cowardice? To say, okay, I'm just gonna walk away from this. Like, here's an issue. Here's somebody sort of putting in front of my face, saying, hey, I have a problem here, and I'm taking a stand. And you're saying, okay, I'm walking. Well, if you're gonna take a stand, I'm turning my back on you. I mean, I can't think of a more un-American act than that.
Well, I don't necessarily look at it as cowardice. I look at it like people are trying to be patriotic for their own reasons, and they're standing up for what they think is right.
But how is that American, Kev, to say?
But those ideas need to be challenged.
Right.
Right. And there are time and place to challenge it. I can't disrupt a fire station at work by saying, hold on, all stop. We're going to get into a philosophical argument, sure, and a historical argument right now. Oh, and by the way, we have to provide the community with what they need on a given notice.
For sure.
That's heavy. That's a conversation over a beer outside of work and say, look, we, you know, meet my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you have it within you,
yeah,
have some conversations with her.
Yeah.
And difficult conversations.
Have you been successful in that?
To a certain degree, yes. Mm-hmm. Have I lost some friendships over the issue? Yes. You just take a stand in life. You hope you could do what you need to do. But I can't walk away from other people because I can't help but have that image burned in my mind of Dr. Martin Luther King sitting with LBJ in the White House.
Right.
It's like the only way we're going to heal, the only way we're going to get better is if we have these open conversations and these uncomfortable dialogues with one another that say, we need to be better educated. We need to look at this from a different lens. It has been grossly unfair to a massive cross-section of America. And if we're going to be a stronger nation, truly, and we're going to eradicate the hopelessness in certain communities and impoverished communities, and if we can lift them out of those circumstances, you know, this country will be vastly stronger. And there's layers to that, right? How do we do it? When do we do it? I'll leave that to much smarter people than myself, but it's going to start with, let's get into it, man.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And meet my wife and let's have the conversation. I mean, because I can understand why saying, okay, look, man, like let's look at the data points. And Kaepernick talked to Nate Boyer, who's a Green Beret. And this was all done, like you said, it was done with thought. And it was done with conviction. This wasn't just some brazen, nobody was pissing on anything. But I also think you, as someone who has served and fought for this country, I think you standing up and saying, hey, listen, you know, like, I'm okay with this. You know, I understand
explore
why he's doing
it. Explore the issue.
Like,
you know, get into it. Challenge your own way of thinking.
Well, best soldier, what you're saying in terms of your training, you know, and to be sort of an elite soldier, it's all about getting uncomfortable. It's about learning. It's about growth. It's that you have to experience some fucking pain. You got to sleep deprivation, no food, like get fucked up, learn about yourself, depend on the guy next to you, learn what you can get from that guy, how you can be there for that guy.
As much as you're uncomfortable in your own mind, body, and spirit, get uncomfortable with your ideas.
That's it.
You know, and, you know, deconstruct your own thoughts about different things and critically think. And, you know, if you're really unsure, you know, take that massive leap, and it may change you. It may not, but that's one step. Keep going and keep diving into it. And then, you know, what have you done? You've developed a relationship with something. Maybe you developed a friendship with something. Maybe you've changed your way of thinking about something. Yep. Maybe you've opened yourself up to a lifelong friendship.
That's right.
Right. Either way, you're enriching yourself.
That's right.
And I think that would be a beautiful thing. Yeah. You know, it's, we need more of it.
100%. If you could change anything about the discourse of this country, or what would it be?
Oh, well, since we're on the topic, you know, when you think about the First Amendment, everyone loves that First Amendment, mm-hmm. right? Before you get too self-righteous about your opinions about things, know that I think that there was divine intervention in that room with our founding fathers. They debated for months and months and months to create a wonderful document that set the foundation for this very country. It's, you know, and that first article, right? It talks about the freedom of speech, that, yeah, exercise your freedom of speech, but don't lose respect for one another. And if someone has a varying opinion or a difference of opinion, doesn't mean you should lose love or, you know, a sense of compassion for them or a lack of understanding for them. It's say, you know what? Maybe it's time to break bread, right? If you're on the left, call up your conservative friend and say, let's go to dinner.
Yeah.
And if we have it out, we have it out.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, just like boxers do or guys
that's
in the
right.
UFC and they've lost their teeth, they're going to go share a beer afterwards.
That's right.
And they're going to laugh and say, agree to disagree. You know, it's all good.
That's
I love
right.
you. You know, we love this country. We're not going to disagree on that.
Yeah.
But build some bonds.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think that we all have to be our authentic selves in the end. And I know I'm going to piss a lot of people off in this conversation out there. Again, I asked them, it's like, pass your own sniff test.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, Kev, what do you think that you've said that's going to piss people off?
Oh, about the gesture in Kaepernick. Uh-huh. It's such a divisive issue. Once it was labeled as you hate America, and that became...
Who do you think's labeling it that?
Oh, the media is perpetuating it. These corporations that know that they can capitalize on the anger of fear of Americans that are very, very frustrated when Americans have nothing to do but be grateful at the abundance that we have.
Yep.
We are not becoming some communist nation.
Yep.
We are not becoming some ultra-right Christian Orthodox, you know, nation from the 1500s, and you know
what makes us fucking great is we're everything, dude.
Yeah,
is we're fucking everything.
We have a lot of good people. That's like it. The people in the foreign affairs offices, you know, and you know, in their political positions overseas are so very they're so well educated.
Yeah,
they're amazing diplomats for the most part,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
we have a lot of good people doing a lot of great work. The Teachers Without Borders, the Teachers Corps, the USAID, all of the work that we're doing overseas is because we're so abundant and because we can afford to. Here's our bounty. We're sharing it with you. Now, as individuals, let's embrace that as what we're doing as a nation, but do it as individuals. Here's my bounty. I'm sharing it with you.
Right.
And watch what happens to your life.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You're going to grow.
Right.
It's going to be an amazing experience.
Right. I do remember, you know, the journey that you and Trace went on with being parents, and me and Aaron both said, there's no two people that need to be parents more than you guys. And I do believe that, you know, she's, you know, I love you, man. And I love your family. And, I'm super grateful. Super grateful. For
I'm
you guys.
Humbled to be here. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. And, you've been a huge source of inspiration for me. Not knowing much about performance art or actors, I dipped my toe in to help a director in a couple small projects. I really didn't understand it. And certainly walking on to a project like Fury with Shia, yourself, and Brad, and Logan, and Mike Pena. And it really blew me away, and really developed a respect for people that were artists. Like that was my first real time I think I saw artists at work. Movies being movies, and it's a massive moving machine, and it's very quick. I didn't develop relationships with too much, and one project saw a tremendous amount of ego, and I was, maybe this isn't for me. But to be able to develop relationships with you, you know, on that set, and see how hard I think that a lot of Americans don't know or can't appreciate how hard like the artists work at their craft and telling these very, very important stories. And it was an incredible experience. You know, and so much has blossomed out of that.
Yeah.
So all I can do is be your cheerleader from the sidelines, brother.
I got you, bro.
Keep up the good work. Keep telling the truth and the great stories, and you know, our family to yours, like we love you, and we're always going to be there for you.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
And we love America too.
Heck yeah, like, we do.
We do. Love, we America. Love America. Love you, America.
Yeah.
Like all of our heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love you. Love you too, bro.
Thanks for being here, everybody. I really appreciate it. If you dug what you saw and you want to hear more, subscribe, like, do all that stuff. It'd mean a lot to us. I hope you dig these episodes as much as we dig doing them. You guys take care of yourself.